braces on my teeth, and I know how it feels to cry myself to sleep. I'm that kid on every playground who's always chosen last.
That's right. Don't laugh at me. This here is Big Dot with you on another Jumbo Braille program here on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Saying welcome one, welcome all to the program tonight, especially our surrounding city and states and our countries near and far, as well as those who called 424-243-9617. Again, 424-243-9617. Press the number one, join the conversation. We'll be glad to hear your questions, comments, or any of those good things, especially as we move along. But first, we got an update from Mr. Jerry as to some things here. And do we got him with us?
Yeah, we got the Father, Son,
good evening.
Bed of Angels. We got Jerry and Seth.
Okay. All right. Jerry, we are ready for your update.
Okay. People, have your pencil and paper ready, and I will give you information. Very brief. Number one, thenewamerican.com. Thenewamerica.com. You got to update about this treaty body sign a paper with Great Britain. It is not good. It has not been ratified, but it has to be ratified by the Senate. This has to do with New World Order situation from United Nations. It's not good. Number two, this about the vaccine. CCHfreedom.org. C for cat. CCHfreedom.org. It's about the update on the vaccine. Number three, October 19, criticalcare.org. October 19, criticalcare.org. The last one on the website, number four, sex change regret .com or .org. I forgot which one. I was trying to update it again. Sex change regret .org. That is very critical. Mr. Rupgang, that's all the information I got right now.
Okay. And we appreciate that, Jerry. We encourage our listeners to check out those websites. Of course, they, as we've said before, all opinions that are given here do not totally reflect those of the station or its owners or viewers, so we do ask you to keep that in mind, but we do ask you if you wish to check those out, you can check those out for yourself and see what Jerry's talking about these different websites that have good information. So check those out. If you need those websites, you can email me at feelandtouchking@gmail.com, and I'll send you the websites. Again, feel like you do with your fingertips, F-E-E-L, the letter N as Nancy, touch like you do with your fingertips, T-O-U-C-H, king like the guy who sits on the throne, wears a crown, K-I-N-G, at gmail.com. Again, feelandtouchking@gmail.com, and we will send you those websites for your further reference. Amen. All right. Now, you say six is on the line with us, Root.
Six, all right, yep.
So how are you doing tonight, six?
Doing quite well. Blessings to all.
All right. Well, we've been started on this book called Baby Love. It's the Coulter family, the regular, more modern books, okay, you know, where they're driving trucks and stuff like that, and they got airplanes and stuff like that. So this is the modern Coulters, and where we've been so far in the book, this guy, he's, now get this, Rafe Kendrick, who's going to end up, eventually, he's going to end up married to, his brother is going to end up married to one of the Coulter ladies, okay? But his, because his Ryan is going to end up married to Bethany. But Rafe, the brother, he had lost his wife at the beginning of the book, his first wife, in a car accident. And what happened is, because of that, he got so depressed, he decided to start bumming the rails and basically being a bum. Even though he's a multimillionaire, he's bumming the rails, okay? Living in boxcars, that kind of thing, okay?
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, he gets this, like, vision or dream of his dead wife who tells him, look, you it's time for you to get ready to, you know, you promised me that you'd find someone else to love. Be ready to, because it's about to happen pretty much, okay? And then lo and behold, when he comes out of this dream, lo and behold, who's in this boxcar along with some other bums but this lady? And she's got a baby with her in the boxcar, okay? So all of a sudden, what happens is these other bums, they get ready to almost try to attack her, but Rafe takes and he fights off these guys for her, and then throws these other bums off the boxcar. So now we got just her and him on this boxcar. Then he, because she has no formula and no diapers or nothing for the baby, he feels compelled to try to help her because she's basically running from an abusive boyfriend, whatever, okay?
Okay.
Which is her baby's, it's her stepdad, and it's also the baby's father, okay? And she's running from him because this guy was abusive and beat her almost to a bloody pulp. And so she's running with the baby. And lo and behold, Rafe decides to help her. And while they ended up in this motel room, and lo and behold, she ended up so sick because of having this, they didn't know what she had, but it was technically later found to be septicemia. They ended up going to the hospital to treat her, and then right at our last reading, he proposes, pretty much. Rafe proposes to marry her to help her, to protect her and the child from this bully named Lonnie Boyle, who was the father, the stepfather. And that's where we left off last.
Okay.
And she had agreed, and so she's still in the hospital. And at the same time, Ryan Kendrick, the brother, is getting ready to fly over with the family jet to pick them up and that kind of thing. So that's where we left off.
Okay.
So that's where we're at tonight, and we're going to be picking up in the story from there in Chapter 8.
Okay.
So,
all right,
are
cool,
you
cool, cool.
You ready for a good read tonight? All right, Ruth, then you can go ahead and give us the preliminaries, and we'll get ready for a good reading tonight.
Okay, we got tonight, we'll be reading Book 1, Baby Love, with Katherine Anderson, narrator Kristen Allison. We'll read chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11. We hope all the listeners enjoy. Take it away, Kenny, on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Yeah!
Chapter 8. Nightmares plagued Maggie as she drifted in a sedative-induced sleep. In each dream, her mother, Heidi, or Jamie was in terrible peril, and Lonnie played the villain with Rafe Kendrick as his sidekick. Frantically, Maggie tried to protect the people she loved, but at every turn she met with insurmountable opposition. In the last nightmare, she was lost in a graveyard after dark, and she knew Lonnie was lurking in the blackness with a huge knife, intent on killing Jamie. She could hear her baby crying, only no matter where she looked, she couldn't find him. Instead, she continually ran into a tall steel fence with spikes at the top. Rafe was always standing just outside the enclosure, grinning at her in that lazy way of his. Marry me, Maggie. No more worries. I'll take care of everything. She awoke confused and drenched in sweat to find herself back in her hospital room with a nurse at her bedside. When Maggie saw the face hovering over hers, she cried out and tried to jerk away. No, it's all right, the nurse said in a soothing voice. I didn't mean to startle you, but it's time to wake up now. Maggie blinked. Her heart felt as if it were leaping from her chest. The nurse held up a strange-looking plastic contraption. Why do I have a feeling that's for me? The nurse nodded. You guessed it. You can't nurse your baby until your infection is gone and you're off the strong medication. With the nurse's help, Maggie managed to sit up. The woman unfastened the back of her gown. I'll shut the door and put up the Do Not Disturb sign. When you're finished, buzz for help, and one of us will come in to refasten this. After the nurse left, Maggie applied herself to the task at hand. The clock on the wall said it was nearly 8 o'clock by the time she finished, and another nurse looked in on her. Exhausted, she lay against the pillows, her gaze fixed on the Venetian blind over the window. Between the slats, she could see the darkness of night beyond the glass, which told her she'd been asleep for hours. I'll take care of everything, Rafe had promised her. Now that her head was a bit clearer, Maggie thought of all the things that could have gone wrong, and her heart squeezed with fear. Lonnie was so unpredictable. Stop it, Maggie. Rafe said he would take care of it. You agreed to let him, and now all you can do is pray he does. It's not as if you have another option. He had probably looked in on her while she was sleeping and decided not to disturb her. Yes, that was it. He had come to give her an update on the situation, but she'd been resting, so he'd left, planning to come back later. So, it was later. Where was he? Trying to shove all the negative thoughts aside, she focused on the positive. Everything had gone fine, and Rafe had probably taken Jamie back to the motel. A hospital lobby wasn't exactly the best place in the world to care for an infant. Picturing Jamie, Maggie's arms ached to hold him, to feel his warm little body pressed against her, to breathe in that sweet baby smell, to touch his downy little head. Jamie. She loved him so very much. No matter what price she had to pay to keep him safe, he was her consolation, her only consolation. Hi there, Angel Face. They said you were finally awake. Maggie turned to see Rafe crossing the room, the door swinging closed behind him. His stride was loose and slow. With each shift of his body, his hair caught the light, glistening like polished onyx. He had his coat draped over one shoulder, the tails concealing his right arm. His gaze swept the length of her, making her feel exposed, even with the sheet and blanket over her. She tugged at the neck of her gown to be sure it was up. Where's Jamie? You didn't let Lonnie take him? Of course not. That's all taken care of. No more worries, just as I promised. As he reached the bed, he leaned down to flash her a conspiratorial grin. I've got a stowaway. Brushing his coat aside, he revealed her sleeping son nestled in his arm. He's not supposed to be in here, but I thought maybe a cuddle session with your favorite fella might be good medicine for what ails you. Tears sprang to Maggie's eyes. Battling the IV, she eagerly took Jamie into her arms. Oh, Rafe, thank you. I've been missing him so much. Now, how did I know that? He said with a silky chuckle. If ever I've seen a good mama, you qualify. Not nearly good enough. Maggie's throat ached as she forced out the words. My life is in such a mess. Not anymore, he assured her, a note of smugness lacing his tone. Mr. Boyle won't cause any more problems, at least not for a while. I guarantee it. Not for a while? Yes, Maggie thought, that just about summed it up. Lonnie Boyle was like radioactive waste buried deep in the ground. As long as he was on the same planet, there would always be a chance of contamination. Maggie was about to insist that Rafe fill her in on all the details when an even more pressing concern occurred to her. Jamie won't get sick from being in here, will he? Maybe that's why babies aren't allowed. Tossing his coat on the visitor's chair, Rafe sat on the edge of her bed and rested an arm on his bent knee. I asked Dr. Hamish if it was safe. She's my partner in crime. She says there's no danger in a private room like this. Will we get in trouble? Maggie whispered. Nah. Most of the nurses know he's here. They've just been pretending not to see him. I only covered him with my coat to surprise you. A nice surprise. She cupped a hand over her baby's head. He's cool. You've still got a fever, honey. He touched her forehead. You're like a little heater turned up on high. How are you feeling? Better now that Jamie's here. This is even worse than when I left him with Mama while I worked. I was always a little afraid she'd forget she had him. You've been working since you gave birth? How soon did you go back to your job after having him? I stayed in the hospital one day, then I took off three more. You've worked for years, haven't you? Ever since your dad died. I was afraid we'd go through his life insurance money if I didn't. And you were back on the job right after childbirth. He shook his head. Never again. She drew back the receiving blanket to admire the new blue sleeper. I didn't have much choice. Having a baby is expensive. Yeah, I understand that, he said dryly. So is postnatal care. You must have felt pretty awful when that kidney infection started. Maggie shook her head. My back ached a lot, but nothing so bad I thought it was a kidney infection and rushed to see a doctor. I have no health insurance, and it's $38 a visit. She heard him sigh. When she glanced up, he was fiddling with things on her bedside table. His hand grew still when he spied the apparatus resting there. Maggie's cheeks grew hot. Christ, it must feel like you're being attacked by a toilet plunger. Maggie gave a startled giggle. He chuckled, too. The tender warmth in his gaze made her uncomfortable. Uncertain what to say, she bent her head and toyed with Jamie's blanket again. How long will they let you be in here? She finally asked. We were here while you slept. So far, they haven't hassled me. I'll call a cab soon and take Jamie back to the motel. He seems to sleep all right with me holding him. But it has to be more restful being in his own bed. As much as Maggie hated the thought of parting with her son, she had to agree. Thank you for taking such good care of him. I hope to make it a lifelong commitment, he said softly. Maggie glanced up and then found she couldn't look away. I took care of Lonnie. You don't have to worry about Heidi. He'll leave her alone for the time being, and in the interim, we'll pull strings to get her out of there as fast as we can. I'll get my lawyer on it as soon as we get home. She'd never known anyone who had a lawyer on retainer all the time. How can you be sure Lonnie won't do anything? What did you do, murder him? He smiled. I was tempted, believe me. But we all have our price. I simply made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Maggie gnawed her lip, thinking of all the times her stepfather had threatened Heidi's safety to keep her in line. Lonnie will promise one thing and do another. You can't trust him to keep his word. I thought of that. When we get to Oregon, I'll call frequently to check on Heidi, and in the morning, I'll place some phone calls and hire a private investigator to keep her under surveillance until I can get her out of there. Lonnie understands if I get a bad report, his ass is going to be grass and I'll be a lawnmower. He also understands that if anything bad happens, even if it appears to be an accident, that his life won't be worth a sugar lump in a rainstorm. He winked at her. I told him I'd find him no matter where he went, and that when I did, I'd kill him. And he believed you? Hell, I was so convincing I damn near believed it myself. He shrugged. I'm not so sure I don't mean it, actually. But fortunately, it isn't a worry. He jumped at the offer I made him. Though she dreaded knowing the answer, morbid curiosity prompted Maggie to ask, You bribed him, didn't you? How much did you offer to pay him? I'm entering it in my little black book. You can worry about the exact amount later. Lonnie went for the bait. That's all that counts. And typical of most bullies, he's too big a coward to cross me. Men like that don't take on anyone their own size or bigger. They prey on those who are weaker. They're bullies, Maggie. Fear is the turn-on. Having absolute power is their ultimate high. They pick on people who can't or won't stand up to them. She fell into one of those categories, those who were weaker. She imagined her life stretching endlessly before her, each day centered around the whims of her keeper. She should be glad Rafe had elected to fill that role. He didn't seem to be cruel like Lonnie, at least. But then she couldn't be sure of that. Until you got backed into a corner, a man seldom showed his true colors. Oh, God, what if she married him and he started venting his temper on Jamie? Jamie wasn't his child. A lot of men resented their stepchildren. Maggie cut the thought short. It wasn't as if she had a choice here. After all, there was no guarantee that the man who wanted to adopt Jamie would be a good father either. At least if she married Rafe, she'd be around to intervene for Jamie if it was necessary, and she'd soon have Heidi with her as well. Having second thoughts, he asked softly, I don't have that luxury. How about you? I never second-guess myself, and even if I did, I'd circle back to where I am right now. He smoothed a palm over the fitted sheet. Then he glanced up and flashed a crooked grin. I'm more into second chances, and that's what you and Jamie are for me, a second chance. I've come to care about you, Maggie. I'm hoping that feeling will eventually be reciprocated, but even if it isn't, I'm still sure I'm doing the right thing. No matter how we circle it, this is an impulsive move. True. But sometimes if you stand around thinking things to death for too long, by the time you reach a decision, it's too late. He searched her gaze. Are you a religious person? I believe there's a God, yes. He winked at her. You see, already we have common ground. I'm a believer as well. But even if I weren't, I think I'd still believe in something. For some people, it's the universe. For others, it's a higher power. Regardless, I'm convinced there's something, call it fate or God or a guardian or the pull of the moon, that's at work in all our lives. Things happen for a reason. Your point? His vivid steel-blue gaze held hers, that there were probably a number of empty boxcars in the train yard that night. He said softly, there usually are. What led you to the one I was in? Poor judgment? He barked with laughter. When his mirth subsided, he shook his head. That too, I guess. But I like to think it was also fate, or maybe your guardian angel. I was minding my own business, happy as a clam with my whiskey for company, and the next thing I knew, I was looking into a pair of big brown eyes I couldn't resist. Maggie had never seen him laugh like that, and for a moment she felt she was glimpsing the man he'd once been. It gave her a good feeling to think that in some way, maybe she and Jamie were responsible for the transformation. I think God looked down and decided I had better things to do than pickle my brain with whiskey. His smile faded, and the expression in his eyes grew solemn. I couldn't help Susan and my kids, Maggie. For whatever reason, it was time for them to go, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. I've lived with the memories, feeling angry and helpless and worthless, and wondering at least 1,000 times why in the hell I didn't die too. Now I think I know. I can make a difference for you and Jamie and Heidi, a little girl I've never even met. That's a very good feeling. And even if this marriage turns out badly, nothing can take that away from me. Tears filled Maggie's eyes. Embarrassed, she looked away. Jesus, don't cry. It's nothing to feel sad about. I'm not sad. She swiped at her cheeks. I'm just... Well, if you want the truth, I'm praying you're really as nice as you seem to be. His mouth tipped into another of those lazy grins. Stick around and find out. As I see it, I don't have much choice. No offense, but I can only hope I'm not making a terrible mistake. Chapter 9. Head resting against the back of the chair, Rafe sat with his legs bent. His scuffed boots bracketed the dresser drawer that served as Jamie's bed. Taking care of a baby was no small responsibility, and he snored so loud he wanted to be sure he woke up if Jamie cried. Just as Rafe started to snooze, a sharp rap on the door jerked him awake. His first thought was that Boyle had reneged on their deal and sent the police. Pushing to his feet, he finger-combed his hair and stepped over to the door. "Who is it?" he growled, fully prepared to make a fast exit out the bathroom window if a cop answered. "It's Ryan," a rough-edged voice replied. Rafe curled his hand over the knob and slipped the lock with his thumb. He hesitated a moment. "Ryan." His grip tightened on the brass. For an instant, when he saw the man on the porch, Rafe felt as if he were staring at his reflection. His brother wore a blue chambray shirt and well-fitting faded jeans, the only difference between their garments the quality of the cloth. Neither of them spoke. Rafe wasn't sure who moved first. The next thing he knew, they stood on the threshold, locked in a rib-cracking hug. As Ryan finally drew away, Rafe felt his brother's body shaking. He flipped the wall switch to turn on the bedside lamp. Stepping farther into the room, Ryan cuffed Rafe lightly on the arm. His voice gruff and thick, he said, "You look like hell. If this is what booze does to a man, it doesn't come highly recommended." Now that he was seeing his brother in better light, Rafe could detect vast differences between them, the most notable that Ryan outweighed him by a good 20 pounds, every ounce honed by grueling physical labor and a rock-hard muscle. Broad shoulders, thighs roped with muscle, and a depth to his chest that Rafe had long since lost. It came as a bit of a shock to realize that his baby brother had matured into a man he would hesitate to take on in a fight. "Damn, son." He pushed the door closed to prevent the cold night air from chilling the baby. "Last time I saw you, I still had to wipe your nose." Ryan gave a derisive snort. "You never wiped my nose." It was true. Rafe hadn't. They were only 2 years apart. Ryan was 28 now, and it showed on his face. At the corners of his steel blue eyes, he was beginning to get crow's feet, and the dimple on his cheek, so like Rafe's own, had deepened into a long, sun-weathered crease. "You're right. Most of the time I just wanted to thump you for being such a smartass." Ryan sent his hat sailing onto the bed and then planted his hands on his hips. You couldn't find anything better than this. It smells of mildew. He strode to the bathroom, gave the broken door a nudge, and shook his head at the dated fixtures. Turning back, he said, at least that rattle-trap heater works. His gaze flicked to the drawer on the floor. He froze and stared at the sleeping infant. When he looked at Rafe again, his mouth hardened. Where's the broad? Still in the hospital? Hearing his brother call Maggie a broad sent Rafe's temper rising. He tamped it down. Ryan hadn't seen Maggie for himself. Once he did, Rafe believed his brother's attitude toward her would undergo a fast change. He hoped so, anyway. If not, there would be some rough road to grade when Ryan found out Rafe planned to marry her. Yeah, she's a pretty sick girl right now. A nasty kidney infection that went septic. Ryan rubbed the corner of his eye. Then he sniffed and stepped soundlessly over to gaze at the baby. You're right. He's a cute little fellow. He angled Rafe a look. Is it the woman you're crazy about or her kid? Rafe chuckled and pushed a hand through his hair. I reckon I'd have to say it's a toss-up. He gestured at the bed, take a load off. Ryan hadn't completed his snooping tour. After peeking in the empty closet, he said, you weren't kidding about bumming the rails. No luggage. My Gucci was stolen. Who's the smartass? Ray folded his length onto the broken-down cushion of the chair, propping his arms on his bent knees, his hands dangling. He watched as Ryan sat on the bed, assuming much the same posture. Until now, he'd never realized how very alike he and his brother were. How'd you find me, anyway? I sweet-talked a little gal at the hospital. I didn't expect you until morning. I got the Cessna ready faster than I hoped. He shrugged and rubbed his palms together. Figured I might as well come, keep you out of trouble. Rafe grinned. If you're hoping to protect me from a conniving woman, you'll laugh at yourself when you meet Maggie. Ryan frowned. I just don't want you making any stupid mistakes, that's all. You've been through a bad time, Rafe. The folks and I are worried some little tramp's gotten her hooks into you. Maggie isn't a tramp. It's not like you to tie up with some gal you hardly know, especially not the kind you'd meet on a boxcar. What type of people bum the rails? You're looking at one. Ryan's mouth tightened. Not every bum has a reason like you did. You're an expert? Rafe settled his gaze on Jamie. Don't be so quick to judge people, Ryan. I could still be out there, you know. And if not for bumping into Maggie, I might never have sobered up enough to care. Ryan sighed. You should have called home. I would have come. You were part of the memories. Can you understand that? I'm trying. Rafe bent his head again. Yeah, well, that's all I can ask, I guess. I know you love me, but love isn't always enough. You've never lost anyone except our grandparents. I know you tried to understand how I felt, that you wanted to help me. But I had lost my whole life, my reason for breathing. There was nothing left in me, nothing. That was impossible for you to relate to. It still is. And this Maggie person can? He threw up his hands. Right. Rafe pushed to his feet and took a slow turn at the foot of the bed. It wasn't that Maggie talked sense into me. She was just there, a battered young woman down on her luck. I was passed out when she got on the boxcar. When I came around, there she was. He shrugged, the words to explain eluding him. She needed me, not the other way around. Do you understand what I'm saying? She needed me. Ryan propped his elbow on his knee and rubbed the bridge of his nose. Watching him, Ray felt an ache of tension in the nape of his neck. I didn't mean to hurt you, Ryan, or Mom and Dad either. I can see that I have. You'll never know. I was so wrapped up in my own pain I couldn't see beyond it. That was selfish and inexcusable, and I'm very sorry. I had only one feeling left, pain. For a while, I was hurting too much to love any of you back. I know that sounds bad, but it's the truth. My feelings for you were there in me somewhere, but I couldn't tap into them or care about anything, and I just had to get out. Ryan pushed to his feet. For an instant, they stared at each other. Then Ryan grabbed him in another bear hug. They held each other like that, their bodies tensed and quivering, emotions neither of them could express churning inside of them. When they finally drew apart, Rafe knew everything would be all right. The following morning, Maggie had just filled her mouth with oatmeal when Rafe Kendrick appeared in her hospital room. In duplicate. For an awful moment, she thought perhaps the nurse had misread the thermometer and she still had a high fever. Two tall cowboys in blue chambray shirts and jeans with black Stetsons cocked at a jaunty angle on their heads. But then she noticed that only one cowboy was carrying her baby, a half-filled bottle clutched in his hand. The other man looked slightly younger and less worn, his Stetson newer, his Western riding boots not as run down. "Maggie, honey, this is my brother Ryan," the slightly older version said. The younger man with the empty arms swept off his hat to reveal jet black, slightly wavy hair exactly like Rafe's. Tall, with a long-legged, well-muscled build, he stood with one lean hip cocked, his right leg slightly bent. The strong features of his face were sharpened by his stony expression, his gray-blue eyes intense and almost startling in contrast to his sun-bronzed skin. "Ma'am," he said coolly, inclining his head, "good to meet you." "Hmm," was the only response Maggie could utter. She struggled to swallow and pushed at her hair, feeling horribly self-conscious. Though nearly a dead ringer for Rafe, Ryan Kendrick could have stepped straight off the set of the television series Dallas, one of her mom's favorite reruns. Despite the faded cowboy garb, he carried himself with the self-assurance of a wealthy rancher accustomed to barking orders. The gold watch on his wrist screamed money. Maggie doubted he was used to seeing women in hospital gowns with no makeup and matted, tangled hair. "I'm pleased to meet you as well," she finally managed to say around the stubborn bits of mush that felt glued to the walls of her throat. Trying to gather her composure, Maggie glanced at Rafe. He had a predatory look that his brother lacked, as if suffering and deprivation had trimmed away all the excess, leaving only a core of hard-edged masculinity. Ryan Kendrick was bulkier, but Rafe was slightly taller and had the more dangerous air. His steely gaze was blade-sharp, the bunched tendons along his lean jaw more defined. There was also an alertness and tension radiating from him, as if he'd grown used to watching his back and fighting to survive. Maggie's spoon rattled as it slipped into the bowl. She could feel Ryan's gaze taking measure of her. He was prepared to dislike everything he saw. Rafe stepped around to the far side of her bed and held Jamie up in the bend of his arm so she might admire the new snowsuit, a bit of blue pile lined with white. Despite her nervousness, she laughed. Rafe drew the baby beyond her reach. "Breakfast first. You're thin as a fence rail." Her oatmeal had lost appeal. "Please, let me hold him for a minute." Rafe narrowed an eye at her, but relented, pushing the caster table aside to place the infant in her arms. Maggie immediately unzipped the snowsuit, anxious to feel her baby's sweet little body. This morning he felt delightfully warm when she curled her hands over him, a sign her temperature had dropped. Dressed in another new sleeper, this one white with blue trim, Jamie blinked and turned his feet, clearly not pleased to be disturbed from his nap. Then, feeling the softness of his mother's breast, he turned and nuzzled the front of her gown. Maggie gave a startled jerk when the baby found his mark. Her cheeks went fiery hot. Even through the wash-worn hospital linen, Jamie latched onto her like a little leech and sucked air when she broke the contact. Angry at having his attempt to breakfast interrupted, her son went crimson and screwed up his small face to scream. Rafe leaned over and plugged the infant's mouth with the nipple of the half-full baby bottle. He let loose with a deep rumbling laugh at the way Jamie's expression instantly changed from hungry outrage to complacent satisfaction. "I think he's ready for brunch." Maggie couldn't bring herself to look up. It was embarrassing to have two men watching while her baby went after her like that. Seeing the crimson that flagged Maggie's cheeks, Rafe glanced over to gauge Ryan's reaction. Just as Rafe had predicted, his brother was staring down at her with a bemused expression, the stern set of his jaw and mouth softening. He glanced up and caught Rafe studying him. A hint of a grin tugged at his mouth, and Rafe knew Maggie had made another conquest. She radiated such sweetness, only a blind man could fail to see that it was genuine. "He sure is a fine-looking boy," Ryan said smoothly, for all the world as if he hadn't entered the room loaded for bear. "I'll bet you're so proud of that baby you're about to bust." Rafe suppressed a chuckle. Maggie's inherent wariness of men had made her one of the most difficult individuals to befriend that he had ever met. But when it came to Jamie, the stiffness always went out of her. She cast his brother a shy smile, clearly disarmed. Damn Ryan's hide. He always had been slick with the ladies, and he hadn't lost the knack. Yes, she said softly. I am proud of him. He's going to be handsome. I'm thankful he takes after my father and won't look like me. Perish the thought. Ryan's forehead pleated in a frown, his raven black brows drawing together over twinkling eyes that were focused with blatant male appreciation on Maggie's delicately sculpted features. Rafe knew exactly what his brother was thinking, that a cameo could be no more perfect. Maggie's cloud of tousled sable curls set off an ivory complexion touched with a strawberry and cream blush at the cheeks. And those huge, incredibly liquid brown eyes were the kind a man could drown in, their size accentuated by a dusky sweep of long, abundant lashes that clustered into silky spikes. "Well, no, I don't know about that," Ryan replied. "Of course, if he looks too much like you when he matures out, he may be too pretty for a boy." Maggie's cheeks bloomed again, and she glanced toward the ceiling, wrinkling her small nose to convey she'd never heard such blarney. Rafe and Ryan exchanged a long look, both of them grinning. Ryan folded his considerable length to sit down on the visitor's chair by the bed. Propping one boot on his denim-clad thigh, he hooked his Stetson on his bent knee. A wave of homesickness washed over Rafe, for he could recall seeing his brother strike just that pose at least 1,000 times in the kitchen of the main ranch house at home. Rafe could almost smell the coffee brewing. He sniffed, and his gaze came to rest on the castor table angled across Maggie's bed. A cup of hot coffee sat on her pink plastic breakfast tray. "So are you anxious to see the ranch, Maggie?" Ryan asked, all hint of animosity gone from his voice. "I haven't told her much about the ranch yet," Rafe interjected. Ryan tapped the toe of his boot on the tile. "You haven't?" He grinned at Maggie. "You're going to love it. 40,000 acres of ranch and timberland that backs up to thousands more of BLM leaseland. Pristine mountain wilderness. It's the perfect place for a boy. Rafe and I grew up there and never had a dull moment. In spring and summer, you can take off on horseback for days. Camp and fish at the mountain lakes. Hike until you drop. Winter sports are limitless. Do you enjoy downhill or cross-country skiing?" "Horseback?" Maggie echoed, evidently hearing little else of what Ryan had said. "Oh, I don't think I want Jamie around horses. He might get hurt." Ryan's gaze sharpened. "Well, of course he'll be around horses." He glanced at Rafe. "We'll have him riding like a pro by the time he turns 3. Maggie cuddled her baby closer to her breast, looking dismayed. Ryan quickly backtracked. "Only with your permission, of course. Once you're there and meet the horses, you'll relax about it. We've got some mares and geldings so gentle you can lay a baby at their feet. Right, Rafe?" Maggie's face blanched. "Of course, we wouldn't actually lay a baby..." Ryan broke off and threw Rafe a look that said, "Help me out here, brother." Forgetting her bruises, Rafe settled a comforting hand on Maggie's shoulder. He was about to assure her that she would always have the final word regarding her baby, but she winced under the light pressure of his grip, and he forgot what he meant to say. Jerking his hand away, he said, "I'm sorry, honey. I didn't mean to hurt you." "I'm fine." "Is something wrong with her shoulder?" Ryan asked. "She's pretty bruised up." "From what?" As he posed the question, Ryan focused a sharp gaze on Maggie, obviously looking her over closely from the neck down for the first time. She self-consciously tugged at the rounded neckline of the overlarge hospital gown, but not in time to keep Ryan from spotting the discolored skin. "Jesus, what happened?" His gaze darted to her exposed arms, which still sported the unmistakable marks of a man's brutal grip. A muscle along Ryan's jaw bunched, and his eyes took on a dangerous glint. He shot Rafe a querying glance. "It's nothing," Maggie said faintly. Ryan's neck turned a ruddy red, and the tattoo of his boot on the floor picked up speed. Rafe decided it was time to get Ryan out of there before he began riddling Maggie with questions he had no right to ask. Checking the wall clock, he said, "I've got some business to take care of in town. While you're finishing breakfast, I'll go do that. Then we'll come back." Maggie cuddled the baby closer. "Could I keep Jamie with me?" "It's probably not a good idea. You're supposed to be resting." "I'm rested." Rafe was beginning to realize he had the spine of a jellyfish where she was concerned. Maybe that was just as well. He had a feeling Maggie had heard the word no far too often. On this issue, though, he had to stand firm. According to Dr. Hamish, she was making great headway against the infection that still coursed through her, but she was a long way from well. As dearly as she loved that baby, keeping him in the room would tire her. "I don't think so, honey." Taking the coward's way out, Rafe quickly added, The nurses have been really good about ignoring him, but if we take too much advantage, they may start enforcing the rules. Then I couldn't bring Jamie to see you at all. Her face fell, but even as her lips drew into a pout that made him yearn to kiss that sweet, vulnerable mouth, she set the bottle on the table, burped Jamie, and then began putting the snowsuit back on him. You're right, of course. I forgot about that. Rules are rules. Rules. They were something she understood all too well, evidently. Rafe's throat tightened as he watched her dress the baby. He wished with all his heart that he could snatch her up from that bed and take her to the ranch, where the only rules in force were ones that had been made to be broken. God, how he wanted to see her smile and make her eyes shine with happiness. He could blow every penny he had on her and never regret the loss. As Rafe took the baby, Ryan pushed to his feet and settled his Stetson on his dark head. It's been great meeting you, Maggie. Now I know why Rafe's so crazy about you. Another painful blush flagged her cheeks. She started to extend her hand to Ryan, but the IV hampered her. He quickly leaned forward to lessen the distance and enfolded her slender fingers in a hard palm. I know you mentioned last night that she'd been battered, but I thought it was a figure of speech. Who the hell did that to her? Ryan's voice fairly vibrated with rage as he and Rafe walked along the east wing hallway toward the hospital lobby. Her stepfather, Lonnie Boyle, a slimy little creep. I met him yesterday. Did you stomp the holy hell out of him? No. Where is he? Rafe started to reply, but bit back the answer. Why? Ryan shot him a disgusted look. He needs his ass kicked, that's why. And you've elected yourself to do the honors? Forget it. There's more to the situation than you understand. Like what? Rafe kept the query on hold as they crossed the crowded lobby. When they gained the front exit and stepped out the automatic doors into the freezing morning air, he tucked the blanket over Jamie's face. It's a long story, Rye. I've got nothing better to do than listen. I won't have you going off half-cocked. Maggie's my problem, understand? In case that isn't clear enough for you, that translates into butt out. Don't embarrass her by asking a bunch of questions, and don't get it into your head that she needs you to be her champion. She's already got one. You? The brother I knew would have beaten a man to within an inch of his life for doing that to a woman? You've either lost your guts, Rafe, or you've pickled your brains with so much booze that your sense of justice went down the john. Where I come from, no man gets away with shit like that. Rafe sighed. We come from the same place, remember? And how dare you judge me without knowing all the facts? An hour ago, you wanted me to dump Jamie on the hospital steps and go home, leaving Maggie to fend for herself. Now you're all hot to go pick a fight on her behalf. So I changed my mind. As they wove their way through the cars in the parking lot, Rafe began filling Ryan in on Maggie's past. When they reached the rented Toyota, Ryan rested his folded arms on the roof to gaze across the expanse of shiny red paint. He arranged to adopt out her kid behind her back and then beat the hell out of her to make her sign the papers. The adoption attorney notarized them, which tells me he's a slimeball, too. He probably wouldn't hesitate to lie about her on the stand. Rafe inclined his head at the baby in his arms. Would you unlock the damn doors? It's cold. Ryan swore under his breath and shoved the key in the lock. An instant later, Rafe heard the latch mechanism pop inside the passenger door. He wrenched on the handle, jerked the door open, and slid onto the low-slung seat, cracking his knee on the dash. Son of a bitch. He shifted Jamie into one arm to rub the spot. Did you have to rent a roller skate? The leg room in here is for midgets. He sniffed and jerked open the ashtray to see cigarette butts. It figures. This isn't Los Angeles. I took what I could get. And don't go lipping off at me. I don't appreciate it. Ryan pulled out the ashtray and rolled down the window to dump the butts on the asphalt. There, is that better? I don't remember you being such a priss butt. Lip off at you? You say I've lost my guts and I'm the one lipping off. Ryan hit the steering wheel with the base of his palm. I'm sorry, all right? How was I to know the son of a bitch had you by the balls? Well, at least you acknowledged I've got some. Do you think it was easy holding onto my temper? I wanted to kill the little asshole. You should see her shins. He kicked her with his boots. And he wears this big honking diamond, probably fake. I know damned well it was the prongs that cut her up. He's a vicious, cocky bastard who needs his teeth knocked down his throat. Ryan tapped his fingers on the wheel. We have to stop cussing. Where that had come from, Rafe didn't know. He cast his brother a befuddled glance. We can't talk like this around Maggie, Ryan elaborated. And what about the baby? You want him to be expelled from kindergarten for swearing? I don't want a pissed-off sister-in-law. Females don't fight fair. Can I take that to mean you're no longer campaigning to make me come to my senses? Ryan rubbed beside his nose. She's not what I expected. So, yeah, you can take it to mean that. Rafe studied Jamie. They say babies start learning their language skills in the womb. You're shitting me. Ryan made a choking sound. Kidding me, I mean. Silence. It's going to be a real bitch to stop cussing again. You know it? Saying dang and gosh just doesn't come naturally. Maybe if we start now, we'll have it mastered before he starts talking. Ryan glanced in the rearview mirror to watch a slender brunette cross the lot. He gave a low whistle. When he glanced back at Rafe, his eyes were twinkling. In a low-pitched voice, he said, Maggie's a sweetheart, Rafe. I'm sorry I acted like such a jerk. Rafe smiled. I wish I'd had a camcorder in there. For what? To catch the expression on your face. You went from tiger to pussycat in 3 seconds flat. My brother, the hard ass. It took more than 3 seconds. 4 at least. Ryan laughed and shook his head. She doesn't have a poker face, that's for sure. I haven't seen anyone blush like that in a coon's age. Like we've never seen a baby go after its mama before. Give her a couple of years on the ranch and she'll toughen up. I hope not. Rafe replied, I like her just the way she is. Yeah, I can tell. Ryan slanted his brother a measuring look. How much did it take to buy the pus pocket off? His last name fits, doesn't it? Boyle. Rafe laughed. Yeah, and right now I feel like lancing him. Offering him money didn't set well, I can tell you, and if it's all the same to you, I'd rather not discuss how much. It went against my grain. But the end justifies the means. I think she's had enough heartache. How's she feel about marrying you? About as enthusiastic as she'd be over a root canal. Ryan mulled that over. Have you thought about giving her a little play in the rope? It's a bad way to start a marriage. You can probably keep Boyle off her back without tying the knot. Rafe knew his brother had a point. I hear what you're saying. But all my instincts tell me I'm doing the right thing. For who? Ryan asked softly. Maggie? Or you? Not fair. She needs someone to watch out for her. You can't deny that. No? And I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to point out that it can backfire when you deliberately toss a rope to four-leg a filly. It's a damned harsh way to take her down. Maggie isn't a filly, and I'm not four-legging her. I'm doing what's best for her. The bastard will never dare mess with her again once she's a Kendrick. That's true. Your name alone will protect her. Just make sure you don't fall into the trap of becoming a bastard yourself. He held up a staying hand when Rafe cut him a glittering glance. I'm not saying you shouldn't marry her. No quarrels, honestly. I'm just playing devil's advocate and trying to remind you she has feelings. If you make the mistake of ignoring them, you may regret it. Frustrated by the low ceiling of the car, Rafe swept his hat off. You going to drive this rattled trap or sit here until we freeze to death? Ryan keyed the ignition. Where to? The main drag. I've got some unfinished business downtown. Rafe cranked up the heater of the rental car, his gaze scanning the street ahead. There it is, he told Ryan. Pull over. I'll only be a few minutes. Ryan parked the red Toyota at one of the many unoccupied meters. After shoving the gear shift into park and cutting the engine, he looked surprised when Rafe handed him the baby. If he cries, stick your knuckle in his mouth. It keeps him happy for a few minutes. Oh, thanks, Ryan said. Now I get to play human pacifier. Just take care of him, all right? This won't take long. If the car starts to get cold, start the engine and run the heater. Rafe climbed out and slammed the door. As he turned to face the pawn shop, his gaze came to rest on the diamond-studded gold band that lay on red velvet in the window. The overhead bell clanged to herald his arrival as he entered the shop. The place smelled of dust and hocked promises. Rafe breathed in the scent as he paced off the distance to the counter. The proprietor, a thin, balding man with strands of gray hair carefully arranged over his shiny scalp, glanced up from a notepad on which he was scribbling figures. May I help you? Rafe fished in his pants pocket for his receipt. Yeah, I hopped a ring in here a couple of days ago. I want to pick it up. The shopkeeper had the good grace to blush. I didn't recognize you. He gestured vaguely at his jaw. Quite a change without the hair and whiskers. He glanced toward the display window. I never expected you back. As I understood it, you weren't supposed to sell the ring for 30 days. You're a little ahead of yourself putting it in the window already. The man rubbed his hands on the front of his green shirt. Yes, well, he laughed nervously. Like I said, I really didn't think you'd be back. Rafe stabbed him with a hard look. Surprise, surprise. The owner scurried over to the window display to collect the ring. This is a fine piece of jewelry. He held the diamonds up to the sunlight coming through the glass. I'm sorry to see it redeemed. It's not often I get something this nice. Rafe pulled out the wad of money Ryan had given him. 20% on top. He peeled off 7 $100 bills, then a light number of 20s, laying them to one side. Good doing business with you. With reluctance, the shopkeeper set the ring on the counter. Rafe picked it up reverently. He nearly slipped it onto the ring finger of his left hand, but at the last second he clasped it in his fist instead. Tossing the crumpled pink receipt on the counter, he turned and left the shop without saying another word. Once outside in the crisp morning air, Rafe stood on the sidewalk, absorbing the clean brightness of the sunlight. Its golden color reminded him of Susan's hair. Such sweet, precious memories. A wealth of them were buried in the dark folds of his mind, but they were only memories, a part of his past. Rafe opened his clenched fist to stare at the ring that lay on his palm. Susan. He smiled again, for only in leaving him had she ever brought him sadness. What a beautiful, rare individual she had been. But God had called her home, and the time to turn loose and let her go was long since past. Rafe stepped to the curb. Glancing up and down the gutter, he spied a grate. He moved toward it, feeling curiously free for the first time in over 2 years. When he stood over the hole, he took one last look at the ring that had been his only remaining link with her for so long. Promise me, Rafe. Promise me you'll find someone else to love. Tears gathered in his eyes as he extended his hand over the grate and opened his palm. I think I've found her, Susan. He whispered softly. I guess you probably knew that. You'd approve of her. It makes me glad to know that. With a flick of his wrist, Rafe dropped the wedding band. It hit the metal grate with a musical tinkling sound, and for a fanciful moment he could almost believe it was the light, lilting sound of Susan's laughter. As the wedding ring tumbled between the grimy slats of the grate, the diamonds winked up at him, as if in final goodbye, and then the brightness was gone. Rafe stood there for a long moment, gazing down into that endless darkness. He'd been trapped in it for so long. It was time to put it forever behind him. Wish me luck, sweetheart, he whispered. I'm going to need it. When Rafe climbed back into the car, Ryan gave him a long, searching look. Is that what I think it was? The tightness left Rafe's throat and he smiled. From the river to the sea, he said softly. She used to throw flower petals into a stream and say that. It seemed like a nice way to say goodbye. For a long moment, Ryan stared intently out the windshield. When he glanced at Rafe again, there was a new understanding in his eyes. Last night you apologized for hurting me. Now it's my turn. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you the way I should have been. He took off his hat, lay it on the console, and rubbed a hand over his hair. You said something else last night. It's been eating at me ever since. That I've never lost anyone I love. You're dead wrong about that. I have lost someone, and now I know how you felt. Rafe's heart caught, his first thought being that one of his parents had died and Ryan had waited until now to tell him, dear God, who? My brother. Seeing the look in Ryan's eyes, Rafe finally understood just how much pain he had inflicted on his family. Ryan, don't say it. You've apologized enough. I'm just glad to have you back. He carefully shifted Jamie in his arms and handed the baby to his brother. Then he retrieved his hat and settled it on his head. The extra baggage you're bringing along is kind of nice, too. He started the car and pulled back out onto the street. At the stoplight, he glanced over. Where to now? Any place special? Rafe released a cleansing sigh. Yeah, as a matter of fact. How long has it been since you did something totally crazy? Waiting for the traffic light to change, Ryan kept his gaze fixed straight ahead. I don't know. A while, I guess. Why? I need you to help me do something. My calendar's clear. What is it? Rafe swallowed. Something illegal. If anything goes wrong, we could both go to prison. Ryan winced and jerked his gaze to Rafe's face. Oh, Jesus. You're going to kill Boyle, aren't you? He shook his head. No way. I'll help you beat the hell out of him, but murder is in my bag. I'm not going to murder anyone. Get real. What then? I want to snatch Maggie's sister. A horn honked behind them. Ryan swore, stepping on the gas as he let out the clutch. The car leapfrogged through the intersection. Have you lost your mind? That's kidnapping. It's a felony. If we get caught, we'll both be gray and impotent by the time we get out of the joint. Yeah, I know. Rafe passed a hand over his face. But the way I plan to do it, it's really not that chancy. I called Mark yesterday to discuss the legalities of it. He... Oh, God. You're actually serious. You've been on the phone with a lawyer? Of course I'm serious. If I cover all the bases, Mark thinks I can do it without getting my tit in a ringer. It won't be precisely legal, but... Which means it's technically kidnapping? Technically, yes. But I've got to do it, Rye. I'm on pretty solid ground with the adoption thing if Boyle keeps his word and reimburses the adoptive parents. And I'm 95% sure Heidi will be fine for a while, left where she is. If I get a team of lawyers to work on it right away, chances are she'll be out of the situation before Boyle does anything. But what if things go sour? I've got this bad feeling about that bastard. There's this look in his eyes, you know? Heidi's only 10 years old, just a baby. How can I take the chance that something might happen to her? Easy. You pray for the wisdom to accept what you can't change. I gave Maggie my word I'd keep her safe, and by God, I will. Ryan shoved the brim of his hat back. Holy hell and high water, you can't do this. The kid'll be okay until you can get her out of there legally. This will be legal, sort of. Rafe turned in the seat to look at his brother. Maggie's mom isn't real bright, and wonderful. Now you're telling me you're about to dilute our gene pool? Not that you're displaying a genius IQ yourself at the moment. Would you shut up and listen? Her mom's brain damaged from a heart attack. She wasn't born that way. Maggie says she's childlike, but as far as Mark could find out, she hasn't been claimed legally incompetent. Mark drew me up a paper and faxed it to the hospital. It basically says Maggie's mom is authorizing me to transport the kid over the state line. If I can get Boyle out of the house long enough to pay her a visit, I think I can con her into signing it before a notary public. Rafe shrugged. Afterward, I take the mother home, snatch the kid when she comes in from school, and we're out of there. Rafe waited a beat. Well, what do you think? I think you're out of your frigging mind. What reason will you give the mother for taking her kid out of the state? Rafe smiled. Disneyland. What? I'll say Maggie and I are going to Disneyland for our honeymoon and that we want to take her sister. Brilliant, right? That way, Helen won't be upset about her kid disappearing, and it's technically legal for me to take her out of Idaho. It's also something a not very bright lady will go for. Disneyland, Mickey Mouse, and all that. She'll be tickled for her kid to get a chance to go. Rafe, this is nuts. There are too many variables. Boyle's no idiot. He'll come home, find out what you've done, and go bananas. They'll call the cops. Yeah, maybe. But possession is 9/10 of the law. We'll have the kid and the paper signed by her mother. Mark says Heidi is probably old enough to speak for herself in front of a judge. Dr. Hamish is willing to testify that Maggie's been savagely beaten. Mark thinks we can plead a strong enough case to cast suspicion on the home environment and get temporary custody. And if you can't? Rafe puffed air into his cheeks. Well, in that case, we could both go to jail. I'd testify that you just flew the plane, though, and didn't know what I was doing. Ignorance of the law is a lousy defense, Ryan pointed out. Maggie can't leave the hospital for 2 more days. Rafe retorted, we'll just be twiddling our thumbs. Why not put the time to better use? Come on, Ryan, where's your sense of adventure? We've always made a good team. Remember all the shenanigans we used to pull? How often did we get caught? Jesus Christ. Ryan pulled the car over to the curb, shoved the shift into neutral, and fixed Rafe with an incredulous look. This isn't exactly on a par with stealing a road sign. We're not kids anymore. Do you realize what you're asking? Yeah. I'm asking you to put your neck on the chopping block. I think we can pull it off, Ryan. It'll be risky, but I think we can do it. My pilot's license is expired. I need you to fly the Cessna and watch Jamie while I do the dirty work. Once we get Heidi, you can drop me off here, then fly her to the ranch. Becca's great with kids. She can watch Heidi while you fly back here to pick me and Maggie up. What do you say? You're discussing kidnapping, and in the same breath, you're worried about flying without your license? Ryan stared out the windshield, his jaw muscle ticking as he thought it over. Then he released a weary sigh and met his brother's gaze. Some things never change. Every time I'm around you, I wind up doing something nuts. Chapter 10. By the time Ryan Kendrick landed the Cessna 340 on the Rocking K airstrip 2 days later, Maggie was feeling like a pampered poodle with an overanxious owner. Since her release from the hospital that morning, Rafe had allowed her to do nothing for herself, not even walk. Dr. Hamish had said that for the next week, Maggie was not to be on her feet except to go to the bathroom. Determined to follow those orders, Rafe had carried her from the wheelchair to the car and then from the car to the airplane, where he had deposited her on the rear passenger seats, which he'd already folded down to make a bed. Her first time to fly, and what did she see? The cabin ceiling. Over the course of the 3-hour flight, he'd drawn the doctor's instructions from his pocket several times. Time for fluid intake? He'd tapped an insulated water jug and filled a plastic 16-ounce glass to the brim, insisting she drink it. He'd even held the glass as if she were incapable. Time for medication? Pills were shoved under her nose and she was made to drink more water. Only a few minutes later, it had been time for her to have fluid again. Maggie had had the feeling he might pinch her nose if she refused to swallow. The Cessna had no toilet. By the time the plane's wheels went spurt-spurt on the tarmac in Oregon, every jolt of the small craft was an agony for her. After Ryan exited the plane by the side door, she pushed up on her elbow to gaze out the oval passenger window near her head, hoping to see a house. Instead, the bright afternoon sunlight glanced off snow-swept fields and mountains for as far as she could see. She pushed up a bit higher to peek out the adjacent window looking for buildings. Nothing. Just wilderness. Signing off the radio, Rafe turned and saw her sitting halfway erect. He unfastened his seatbelt and swung from the co-pilot seat into the center aisle. Just rest easy, honey. Ryan has to start the forerunner and get it warm, so it'll be a few minutes before we get out. He bent over a first-row seat to check on the sleeping baby and then moved aft to hunker in front of her. Maggie half expected him to whip a glass of water from behind his back. Instead, he pressed a hand to her forehead. How you feeling? Tired, I'll bet. Maggie was too tense to be tired. She'd never been across the Idaho state line, and she'd never stepped foot on an airplane either. Now she was about to marry a man whose family owned two, this Cessna, which had a pressurized cabin for comfortable long-distance travel, and a small single engine called an Eagle, which Rafe had explained was used for ranch work. What? He asked softly. Maggie shook her head. How could she explain her feelings when they were in such a tangle? This man, who'd poured 64 ounces of water into her in the last 3 hours and hadn't stopped to think she might need to use the restroom, had taken control of her life. A part of Maggie knew Rafe meant her no harm. He treated her as if she were made of fragile glass, his solicitousness almost suffocating. How could she fear someone who seemed so frantically concerned about her well-being? Yet, on a level where reason held no sway, Maggie did fear him. She'd been in a situation where a man had complete control of her world, and she'd learned from experience just how vulnerable that made her. Can you sit up, honey? Maggie did as he asked, relieved to find that she felt much stronger now than she had in days. He reached for her parka. I can do it, she protested as he began fishing her arm down a sleeve. When that didn't slow him down, she added, I hate being so much trouble. He tugged the jacket up onto her shoulder, then reached behind her to pull it around. You're no trouble, he said huskily. He hesitated in his task to cup her chin in his big hand and make her look at him. You'll never know how sincerely I mean that. It seemed to Maggie that his dark face came closer, and for a moment she felt sure he was about to kiss her. Her heart flip-flopped, sending a flutter into her throat. Her gaze went to his mouth. In the dimness of the plane, his firm lips had a satiny sheen. For a fleeting instant, she wondered what it might be like to kiss a man whose breath didn't reek of stale cigarettes and beer. Shocked at herself, Maggie shoved the thought away. A mischievous glint danced in Rafe's eyes, as if he knew exactly what she was thinking. Letting the coat puddle behind her, he tightened his hold on her chin and curled his other hand over her nape, his hard fingers sifting through the strands of her hair to rest with intimate possessiveness on her skin. Shivers ribboned down her spine as he traced circles with his fingertips. His features blurred as he pressed closer. Maggie planted a hand on his chest, intending to hold him away. The instant her palm connected with the front of his shirt, that hope fled. He felt as heavy and immovable as a wall of granite. Her breath snagged in her throat as his lips settled over hers. Velvet heat. He tipped his head to gain better control of the kiss, parting his lips and touching the tip of his tongue lightly to hers. Maggie jerked, his arm tensed, the wide palm on her nape becoming a relentless but gentle restraint that held her fast. He tasted her as he might a sweet he meant to savor, with light brushes of his tongue that teased her sensitive flesh like the flutter of a butterfly wing. His breath mingled with hers, hot and laced with the rich taste of coffee and mint. Maggie felt as if her bones were dissolving. The stutter of her pulse at the base of her throat became a pounding that seemed to echo in her temples. He wouldn't allow her to pull away, and she couldn't help but be frightened by the sheer power she felt radiating from his big body. She'd found herself on the receiving end of a man's greater strength too many times to easily discount the dangers. But at the same time, she was fascinated. Every other kiss she'd ever experienced had been a slobbery grinding of teeth that had hurt her lips and made her feel as if she were going to strangle on her own bile. By contrast, Rafe's mouth coaxed hers for a response she didn't know how to give. When he drew back, there was a question in his eyes. Maggie gulped and groped for the coat sleeve behind her. I'm not a very good kisser, I'm afraid. As she fumbled with the jacket, he continued to caress her neck, his touch seeming to become more electrical with every pass of his fingertips. Her stomach felt as if she had swallowed a giant-sized carton of live goldfish. Maggie, he whispered. She froze, her gaze drawn to his by the silky demand in his tone. He smiled slightly and rubbed his thumb over her mouth. What? She squeaked. He leaned forward to graze his lips along her temple, his breath stirring the curls there as he whispered, You kiss like an angel. He drew back and released her. As he reached around her to finish helping her into the jacket, he smiled. Is there anything I can do to make you feel a little less nervous? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the feeling you're a little afraid of me. There's no reason to be. No reason? He'd made clear his intention to make this a real marriage. She found the prospect of physical intimacy terrifying. Not that she would ever admit it. Fear was yet another weakness that a man could use against you. Trying to keep her expression carefully blank, she bent her head to fumble with the zipper. I'm not afraid of you. That's silly. It truly is silly, a small voice inside her mind chided. Any fool can see he doesn't mean to hurt you. Maggie guessed she was like those people who were afraid of heights. Even standing behind a sturdy guardrail, they couldn't breathe when they looked down. Sometimes a person's fears defied all reason. Why would I be afraid? He brushed her fingers aside. Is that why your hands are shaking? Because you trust me so much? Maggie looked down and saw that he was right. She was shaking. I'm just cold. He zipped the jacket and rocked back on his heels, his well-muscled arms resting loosely on his knees. His expression was bemused as he regarded her. I'll never hurt you. I want you to know that. And when the time comes that we make love, you'll want to do it. I promise you that. Maggie barely managed to suppress a shudder. That would be nice. Better than nice. He assured her, much better than nice. Maggie had her doubts. She would be greatly relieved if sexual intimacy with him turned out to be tolerable. Nice was a bit much to hope for. He stood and drew her to her feet. Just then, Ryan opened the door of the plane. The forerunners heated up. Rafe gathered Jamie from the seat and handed him down to his brother, who promptly ran toward the waiting Ford to get the baby in out of the cold. Grabbing a hand strap suspended from the ceiling, Rafe swung from the plane, bypassing the drop-down steps. He caught his balance and turned, motioning her to the doorway. When she came within reach, he swept her into his arms. As he carried her toward the expensive sport utility vehicle parked a few feet away, she spied a small hangar in front of the plane that she'd been unable to see from the rear windows. "Does that building have a restroom?" she asked, hating herself for blushing. "It sure does." He broke stride and veered toward the hangar. It lay quite a distance away, and the snow at the edge of the plowed runway was over a foot deep. "I can walk," she suggested. "I'm feeling much stronger today." "It's farther than it looks," was his only reply. Maggie stifled a sigh. At the end of the tarmac, he jostled her in his arms to get a better hold and then struck off through the drifts. Maggie clutched his shirt, her body tense. She was only a few feet off the ground, but it seemed like much more. "It looks icy and slick in spots," she observed, thinking how easily he might slip. "It is." Maggie kept expecting him to get breathless. It was hard going, and he was lugging a lot of extra weight. But he trudged on without getting winded. Once at the hangar, he bent slightly to open a door, then carried her inside a small office furnished with only a desk, a chair, and a metal file cabinet. He set her on her feet in front of another door. "Thank you." He leaned around her to twist the knob and flip on the bathroom light. "You're very welcome. If you need any help, just holler." "Not in this lifetime." Her legs felt weak, undoubtedly from lying in bed so long. She stepped inside, closed the door, and was about to turn the latch when he said, "Don't lock it, all right? Just in case. I don't want to have to break down the door again." She quickly finished her business. When she emerged from the bathroom, she found him gazing at a picture on the wall. "My son, Kiefer," he said. "It was taken the summer before." "Before." Maggie moved closer, wondering what it must be like to have your life divided into two parts, before and after. The child perched on Rafe's bare shoulders in the snapshot looked about two, with chubby cherub cheeks and wavy dark brown hair. He bore a striking resemblance to his father. The camera had caught Rafe laughing. He had been much younger then, if not in years, at least at heart, his eyes dancing with merriment. He'd also been huskier of build, his bronze upper body a sculpture of male strength, with bulging biceps, a powerfully padded chest, and an abdomen striated with rock-hard muscle. He'd been wearing jeans that skinned his lean hips and long legs. Her gaze returned to the child, whose dimpled fingers were clenched in his father's wind-tossed black hair. She almost said she knew how seeing the picture must hurt, but if she were to lose Jamie, she wouldn't want people to pretend they understood how she felt. She didn't understand. She could only imagine, and she prayed to God it remained that way. "Ready?" Maggie glanced up. Rafe was smiling, but the shadows in his eyes were difficult to miss. "I'm so sorry." She hesitated and then heard herself saying exactly what she'd decided not to. "I know how it must hurt." "That's the first picture I've seen since I left," he said softly. "It kind of blindsided me, is all." He swept her up into his arms. Maggie hugged his sturdy neck, once again feeling as if she were dangling from a skyscraper ledge. The sadness had left his eyes. "Worried I'll turn loose of you?" "I'm hoping not," she replied. A slow grin spread over his firm mouth. "Count on it, Maggie girl." As he carried her to the waiting forerunner, Maggie wondered if he'd meant that as a reassurance or a threat. En route to the house, Maggie hugged her sleeping baby close and peered out the windows of the forerunner for some sign of buildings. All she saw were distant mountains, pine and fir trees, open fields, and Herefords, all of which seemed to be running loose. It was beautiful landscape, like some of the winter scenes she'd seen on postcards. But admiring pictures and being smack dab in the middle of the reality were two different things. After living in town all her life, she felt displaced here and cut off from the world. Even the luxurious interior of the expedition smelled alien to her, the familiar scents of new car leather and molded plastic blended with foreign odors. Grass of some kind, maybe? And horses? Glancing over her shoulder, Maggie saw that the back storage area of the Ford was strewn with pieces of rope, strange-looking leather straps, chunky metal gadgets, and bits of hay. Rafe, who sat beside her in the back, finally noticed her craning her neck to see out his window and flashed her a questioning look. Maggie glanced up at him. "Where's the house?" "It's still quite a ways," Ryan said as he veered left to miss a muddy pothole in the gravel road. 40,000 acres is a mighty big spread. The main house is about 7 more miles from here. the main house? Ryan made it sound as if they had dozens. Are all 7 miles part of your ranch? Just as Maggie asked that, the expedition hit a bump that snapped her teeth together and bounced her sideways on the plush leather seat. She tightened her hold on Jamie. Rafe glanced down and curled a strong arm around her shoulders. I think you need a little extra ballast. He dipped his head to look out his window. In answer to your question, yes, we'll be on Rocking K Land, clear into the main house. You see out through there? Maggie followed his gaze. All she saw was brutal wilderness. Yes, look as far into the distance as you can, he instructed. When she fixed her gaze on the most distant point of the horizon she could find, he said, that's all either part of the Rocking K or land on a renewable 99-year lease. Our dad started the operation 35 years ago. Incredulous, Maggie continued to stare at the horizon. Wow. Why do I have the feeling you can't walk to the grocery store from here? You're right. The closest store would be quite a trek. Maggie peered out her window. Is that all the Rocking K as well? Yes. How's it going to feel to know you own that much dirt? The question was a reminder of their forthcoming marriage, and Maggie tightened her arms around Jamie, her reason for being there. She wanted her world back, the one with sidewalks and corner markets and neighbors she'd known all her life. Minus Lonnie, of course. From the very beginning, he had messed up her life. Now he had obliterated it. Ryan chuckled. Now that's a unique way of putting it, owning a lot of dirt. He glanced in the mirror. All she can see right now is snow, but in the summer we've got dirt, Maggie. Lots of it. Her joy knew no bounds. Rafe drew her more snugly against him. Honey, you're going to love the ranch. Don't look so worried. It's just that I'm a town person, I guess. Maybe I'll get used to it. We've got a large town only 20 minutes away. Once you get to the highway, Ryan pointed out as if that were another highlight. It's the ultimate in privacy out here. No prying eyes, no pesky neighbors. You can parade naked in the yard if you want. Don't even think about it. Rafe warned with a possessive growl in his voice. With all the hired hands on the place, it isn't quite that private. Maggie had no intention of parting with her clothing, period. Even as the thought rooted in her mind, she quickly qualified it. She'd part with her clothes quickly enough when Rafe decided she should. You keep saying the main house. Is there more than one? You could say that. Ryan braked to ease the vehicle over a rut. There's my place about a mile from Rafe's, and after the folks signed the ranch over to us, they built a cottage on the opposite side of the lake. Then there's the housing for our hired hands and families, plus all the line shacks. A few minutes later, the expedition rounded a curve, and the wilderness gave way to white fencing that seemed to stretch forever. She spotted white outbuildings. There's the house, Rafe whispered. She focused on the sprawling brick home that sat on a gentle snow-covered knoll in the distance. As Ryan drove closer, she saw that the huge structure was a two-story with white trim and ivy trailing up the 5 exterior chimneys. The expensive multi-pitched roof was covered with burnt red tiles. That wasn't a house. It was a mansion. So, what do you think? She threw Rafe an incredulous look. What did she think? She remembered her cowboy bum in the ragged, filthy clothing with his shoulder-length hair going every which way under the droopy brim of his dusty Stetson. Even later, when he'd told her he was rich, she hadn't imagined this. How would she ever fit in here? It's beautiful, Maggie said hollowly. Honey, what's wrong? He peered through the windshield at the house as if he expected to see that the massive roof had caved in or something. When he looked back at her, he said, if you hate it, I'll build you another one. We don't have to live there. This spring we'll go riding and looking for a building site. On a horse? No, it isn't that. It's a beautiful house. It's just... Maggie broke off and stared at it some more. She'd get lost in there. I'm not used to houses that are so big. It is big, Ryan agreed. But you guys won't live in all of it. The basement floor is a huge industrial-scale kitchen to feed the crews during roundups, with a big dining area and another big room for dances and parties. The main floor is only, what, Rafe, 7,000 square feet? Thereabout, Rafe replied. 8 tops, and much of that is guest rooms. Out the right back window, Maggie saw a gorgeous red horse on the opposite side of the fence. It pranced along with the car, its tail uplifted and its mane flying. Rafe spotted it at the same instant. What's that son of a bitch still doing here? I told you to sell him or shoot him. He's a world-class stud. After you left, what was the point? Maggie had never heard Rafe's voice so cold. She glanced at the horse again and remembered the story he'd told her about the car wreck. She knew then that this was the stallion that had been kicking up a fuss in the trailer that night during the hailstorm. Maggie couldn't really blame Rafe for not being able to stand the sight of it. His expression was still set in grim lines when he carried Maggie to the house. Ryan followed, carrying Jamie. They entered into what Ryan called the mud room, but was actually a huge atrium laced with stone walkways and beds of greenery. At the center was a bench-encircled fish pond with a waterfall. For a long moment, Rafe stood just inside the door. Maggie suspected he had mixed emotions about this homecoming and was remembering his family. After a moment, he smiled down at her. You're right. It's big. Maggie relaxed slightly, glad that the moment had passed. When she sensed his sadness, she wanted to comfort him. Not smart, under the circumstances. She would be inviting trouble. She'd seen the possessive gleam in Rafe Kendrick's eyes and knew it wouldn't take much to make him amorous. He struck off for a set of sliders at the opposite end of the vaulted enclosure. She tightened her hold on his neck as he bent at the knees to open the glass door. He stepped into a huge country kitchen with copper-bottomed pots hanging from hooks over a butcher block work island. One entire wall was dominated by a stone fireplace. A cheerful fire crackled in the grate, and two well-worn wooden rockers sat before the hearth, inviting tired souls to sit back and kick up their feet. Across the room from the hearth was a long plank table with crossbuck legs. Individual stools were positioned haphazardly around it. At the sound of the door opening, a hefty woman with a wavy cap of gray hair turned from the sink. When she saw Rafe, her green eyes filled with tears. She wiped her wet hands on the starched white apron covering her brown dress. Raphael! She lumbered across the room and launched her sizable self at him, sandwiching Maggie between his hard chest and her soft, ample one. A plump arm hooked Maggie around the neck, forcing her face against Rafe's jaw as it squeezed. Oh, my boy, praise the Lord, it's a miracle. I prayed and prayed you weren't dead, and now here you are, real as life. Careful of Maggie, Becca. Rafe cautioned with a laugh. She's still a little sore. He dipped his head to kiss her wrinkled cheek. When he straightened, he grinned. What's to eat? I'm starving. Becca stepped back and cupped her pudgy hands to her cheeks, her gaze fixed on his dark countenance. Then her face dissolved and she started to cry in earnest. I didn't think I'd ever hear you ask me that again. Rafe flashed Maggie an apologetic look and deposited her on one of the rockers. He went to take the older woman in his arms. Hunching his shoulders, he bent his head to kiss her temple. I never meant to put all of you through such a bad time, he said gruffly. She ran her hands over his broad back as if she couldn't believe he was real, even as she launched into a scolding. Taking off without a word and then never calling home. I've a good mind to warm your seat with my spatula. Later, he said with a choked laugh. I'm not grabbing my ankles in front of Maggie. It's not dignified. Becca sobbed and then chuckled. Well, then, you'd better straighten yourself up. Any more nonsense out of you, and I'll tan your hide right in front of her, mark my words. What you've put your mama through, for shame, Raphael, and your daddy, bless his heart. I've never seen that man shed a tear, mind you, and he cried like a baby the other night when he called to tell me. I'm sorry, so sorry. When Ryan stepped into the kitchen, Maggie held up her arms for the baby. He shook his head. I think you're heading straight for bed. Overhearing his brother's comment, Rafe pulled away from the housekeeper. Becca patted her cheeks dry and tugged at her dress and aprons. My guess. What am I thinking, letting you sit there, Maggie? Forgive me. I'm perfectly fine, Maggie assured her. Fiddle. Raphael told me on the phone how sick you've been. Well, never you worry. The master suite is all ready for you. Raphael had the room completely redone before he left. You'll be the first to sleep in there since... Well, in a good long while. And I've prepared the nursery as best I can. All the furniture in there was... She broke off and glanced at Rafe. Well, never mind. Raphael will have to buy more, is all. I've borrowed a few things from the wives of the hired hands that will do us for now. I'd prefer to have Jamie in the same room with me, Maggie said. Only if I have your promise that you won't try to take care of him yourself. Rafe inserted, doctor's orders, remember, complete bed rest. The determined glint in his eyes told Maggie that arguing would get her nowhere. She decided a half a loaf was better than nothing. I remember. He came to lift her from the rocker. To Becca, he said, she isn't supposed to be on her feet for a week. And she won't be, Becca said firmly. It's probably all right for me to get up for a little while if I'm... No arguments, Becca said, cutting Maggie short. I'd like to give you a bit of time to settle in before I take after you with my spatula, but I won't hesitate if I catch you disobeying your doctor. She waddled from the kitchen into a long hallway, speaking to Rafe, who followed behind her. I already called Dr. Kirsch, so he's standing by. Did you bring all the medication she needs? Got it. I'll want a list of instructions in her care. Don't be forgetting and taking off to the stables before you give it to me. I'm not taking off anywhere, Becca. You'll have your hands full with Jamie in the household. Oh, poo. I can accomplish more with a baby in one arm than three women and a girl. She threw open a door and stepped inside a huge room with mauve carpeting and creamy walls, her broad hips almost touching the doorframe at both sides. The bed is turned down, she said, scurrying over to a long bank of windows to draw the drapes against the late afternoon sunlight. Just set her there on the edge. Did you get the nightgowns? I sent Dolores to town after you called me. You forgot to give me a shoe size, so she bought stretchy-type slippers. The robe is a nice heavy velour. She paused with one hand on a draw cord. It's all there at the foot of the bed. Maggie wanted to remind them she was an adult, not a sick child. They were talking back and forth as if she weren't there. Rafe set her on the mattress, which was covered with taut sheets that looked as if they had been ironed. He crouched to untie her shoes just as Maggie bent forward to do it herself, and they bumped heads. She blinked away stars and grabbed her temple. Sweetheart, are you all right? Much more help, and they were going to kill her. She stared at him, rubbing the throbbing place. It usually took a lot to make Maggie angry, but she was quickly getting there. I'll do it, she said as he reached for her foot again. Don't be silly. It hurts your back to bend over. He unlaced one of her shoes and jerked it off. As he attacked her other sneaker, he glanced at the floral print gown and burgundy velour robe at the foot of the bed. Ankle-length flannel, he said with a curl of his lip. Finished withdrawing the drapes, Becca ambled to the bedside table to flip on the light. If you want negligees, go buy them yourself. Rafe winked at Maggie as he brushed her hands aside to unzip her coat. Maybe I'll just do that. Maggie started to peel off the jacket. He drew it down before she could move, trapping her arms at the elbows. As he tugged the sleeves off over her hands, Maggie got a bad feeling about this. Sure enough, after tossing the jacket aside, he reached for the buttons of her blouse. Maggie grabbed his wrists. I'll do it, she said. Honey, don't. Maggie's temper snapped. She slapped at his hands. Out! Both of you! I appreciate your concern, but I'm not an invalid. Rafe rocked back on his heels, looking mildly startled. Becca planted her hands on her ample hips. The two of them stared at her. Maggie felt lightheaded when she pushed to her feet. She grasped the ornately carved bedpost. Out, she said firmly. When I'm done, I'll holler. Becca and Rafe exchanged worried looks. She's just tired, he said. Poor dear, Becca said. Maggie felt like pulling her hair. To her relief, though, they both left the room to afford her some privacy. She had just started to unbutton her blouse when Rafe opened the door and poked his head back in. She jerked her blouse closed. If you need me, I'll be right here in the hall. Don't hesitate to call me. Maggie felt guilty after he shut the door. He was only concerned about her, and here she was biting his head off. Little wonder he was treating her like a child. She was behaving like one. She finished undressing and slipped into the flannel nightgown before sitting on the edge of the bed. Taken separately, the things she was upset about seemed trivial. Not being allowed to hold her own glass, having pills shoved in her mouth, being packed around, starting to do things and having him stop her. It was 100 little things. It was only when they were heaped together that they became something big. He was suffocating her. Feeling drained, she slipped between the crisp sheets and fell back against the pillows. Scanning the large room, she took in the ecru walls and slightly darker drapes. There was no fire in the grate of the rock fireplace, a smaller version of the one in the kitchen, but Maggie could imagine the ember warmth, even so. In one corner, two easy chairs were cozied up around a small reading table. On a cold winter night, reading near a crackling fire would be nice, she guessed. It was just a little difficult to feature herself in here with a husband who might want to have sex with her after he closed his book. She turned her face into the pillow, wanting to cry, which made no sense at all. She'd never been the weepy sort and had no patience with people who were. Postnatal blues? She'd read about the hormone imbalances women could get after having a baby. Was that what was wrong with her? She didn't feel as if her system was out of whack. It was the world around her that seemed to be careening. She heard the bedroom door open. Thinking it was Rafe returning to check on her, she didn't look up. Maggie? At the sound of that sweet, familiar voice, Maggie's heart leaped. She sat bolt upright and stared at the child standing just inside the room, her small hand still clasping the doorknob. Heidi? Maggie couldn't believe her eyes. Oh, Heidi, what? How did you get here? Her little sister gave a glad cry and came racing across the room. When she reached the bed, she bounded onto the mattress and flung both arms around Maggie's neck. Oh, Maggie, I'm so glad you're here. It's been lots and lots of fun, but I've been so awful lonesome for you. Maggie barely noticed the pain of being hugged as she caught her sister in her arms. Heidi. She ran her hands over the child's back and pressed her face into her hair, breathing in the familiar sweet scent of her. Oh, Heidi, I've been lonesome for you, too. I had no idea you were here. It was a surprise. Heidi reared back, her big brown eyes dancing with excitement. Guess what? Rafe and Ryan have horses, tons of them, and Sly says he'll teach me to ride. Who's Sly? The ranch foreman. He's really nice. You'll like him lots. Just wait till you see him spit. Spit? Yeah, he chews. Heidi wrinkled her nose. Then she brightened. He says he can nail a fly at 4 paces. Maggie gave a startled laugh. What an amazing accomplishment. He says he'll have me ready to barrel race at the rodeo next summer. Won't that be awesome? Barrel race? Heidi, you're only 10. That's old enough. Sly says the younger I start, the better chance I'll have to become a champion. She giggled at the worried expression on Maggie's face. I won't get hurt, Maggie. It's so fun. There are 14 horses just in the stable. I helped muck stalls this morning. As soon as you say it's okay, Sly says I can have my first riding lesson. Heidi had always wanted a horse. It was a wish that Maggie had never been able to grant. Say yes, Maggie. Please. I'll be real careful, I promise. Give me some time to discuss it with Rafe, Maggie settled for saying. If he says it's safe, then I'll give the go-ahead. But in case he doesn't, don't go getting your hopes up. He may recommend that you wait until you're older. Oh, he won't, Heidi assured her. Then with a giggle, she kissed Maggie's cheek. Thank you, thank you. I'm so excited. Just wait and see, Maggie. I'll be an awesome rider. Rafe says I've got a great build for racing because I'll never weigh very much. Fantastic. You mean he's already said you can learn to ride? Not until you say I can, but when I asked him on the airplane, he said he'd talk to you. He started learning when he was a lot younger than me. Rafe stepped into the open doorway just then. Loosely folding his arms, he leaned against the doorframe, his gaze meeting Maggie's over the top of Heidi's dark head. He smiled slightly, then appeared to listen intently to the child's excited chatter. Maggie was dying to question him. For the life of her, she couldn't imagine how he had managed to get Heidi away from Lonnie. Absently, she attended Heidi's enthusiastic accounts of her experiences at the stable. When the child wound down, Rafe finally spoke. Heidi, I know you've got all kinds of catching up to do with Maggie, but Sly's waiting for you. He says you asked to ride over to Ryan's with him this afternoon. Heidi bounced off the bed. To see the colt! Sly says he's beautiful! She whirled to glance back at Maggie. Is it all right if I go? He's a brand new baby. His name is Lightning Dancer, and I want to see him so much. Maggie no sooner gave her permission than Heidi raced from the room. Rafe gazed after her for a moment, still smiling. Then he returned his attention to Maggie. She thinks of you more as her mother than a sister, doesn't she? Maggie nodded. Mom is so childlike that Heidi naturally looked to me. The feeling's mutual. I've taken care of her since she was tiny. I suppose you're anxious to hear how I got her here. Day before yesterday, when you came by the hospital to tell me you'd be gone all day, taking care of some business, that's where you went, isn't it, to get Heidi? I did it in a way that didn't upset your mom. He hastily assured her, just in case you're concerned about that. Naturally, that worry had occurred to her. She loved her mother, and due to Helen's heart condition, the very thought of distressing her was terrifying to Maggie. How did you manage not to upset her? He rubbed beside his nose, looking sheepish. Well, actually, I lied through my teeth. He explained about the fictitious honeymoon plans to Disneyland. Amazingly enough, she fell for it. He marveled. There I was, a total stranger who popped up on her doorstep, and it never occurred to her to be suspicious. He gave her a slow wink. She kept patting my arm, saying, "It's about time my Maggie found herself a nice young man." I told you she's not very... Well, it doesn't occur to Mama that anyone might lie to her. Maggie searched his gaze. How did you know how much she's always wanted to take Heidi to Disneyland? It seemed like a sure bet. He sighed, bending his head and lightly scuffing the sole of his boot on the rug. I would have told you what I was up to, Maggie, but I didn't want to worry you. A lot could have gone wrong, and I figured the less you knew, the better, until you could see for yourself that Heidi was here, safe and happy. He launched into a detailed account of how he and Ryan had pulled it off. Apparently, she's enjoyed staying here the last 2 days. He concluded, I've never seen a kid quite so wound up. She really loves horses, doesn't she? Yes, she always has. I could never afford to get her one. Maggie smoothed a hand over the blanket that covered her knees. Her throat went tight when she met his gaze again, for she suspected that he'd glossed over the very real risk that he had taken in getting Heidi there. If Lonnie gets Mama to file charges, isn't there a good chance you could go to jail for doing this? His mouth quirked at the corners. Hoping to get rid of me? A pang of guilt stabbed into her chest. No, of course not. He pushed away from the doorframe and stepped to the foot of her bed. I've got my lawyer working on it. If I get my hand slapped, I get my hand slapped. The important thing is that Heidi's safe. His gaze held hers. You may have to give a deposition, but my attorney feels we can present a strong case and that once we're married, we can get temporary custody of her. When that's accomplished, he'll start to work on a more permanent solution. Maggie seriously doubted it was as cut and dry as that. Nothing that involved Lonnie Boyle ever was. Thank you, Rafe. Her voice came out sounding tight and a little shrill. Having Heidi here, knowing she's safe and happy, that means more to me than I can say. I don't know how I'll ever be able to repay you. His firm mouth tipped into a grin and a mischievous twinkle entered his eyes. I'm sure I'll think of something. Chapter 11. Rafe tapped his pen on the desk and then tossed it on the blotter. Kicking back in the leather office chair, he propped his boots on the edge of an open drawer and stared at the check he'd just written to Lonnie Boyle. To someone like Boyle, it would seem like a fortune. It was no small chunk of change, even to Rafe, and it rankled to give the bastard so much. Everything within him rebelled. He sighed and ran his gaze over the richly appointed study. After being away for so long, he was acutely conscious of the smell of orange oil and furniture wax each time he drew breath, scents that had been non-existent for him these last 2 years. Floor-to-ceiling bookshelves filled with leather-bound classics and agricultural and animal husbandry tomes lined most of the cedar-paneled walls. The few bare spots played host to paintings, all of them nature scenes by a local artist named Dobbs. The last time he had sat in this chair, he'd felt as if his life was over. Now he had Maggie, Jamie, and Heidi. He no longer mourned what he had lost. The future beckoned to him, as shiny bright as a brand new penny. There was so very much that he could give them. A second chance. He remembered how Lonnie had thrown it up to Maggie about the advantaged childhood Jamie could have with his adoptive parents, making it sound as if anything she had to offer was little better than chopped liver. Well, the boy would have even more advantages now, and so would Heidi. Maggie could pore over decorating books to her heart's content and bring in professionals to fix up their rooms. Those kids would never want for anything. As for college, Rafe would definitely encourage both children to further their educations, be they related to ranching or another field entirely. Rafe had 2 degrees himself, and no doors would be closed to his kids. When it was all said and done, Maggie would never regret keeping her child or feel that by doing so she had shortchanged Jamie in any way. He would make damn sure of that. He already loved the boy, and he'd be a good father, not only seeing to it that Jamie wanted for nothing, but that he was raised with a sterling set of values and work ethics. Right now, Rafe suspected that Maggie found the vastness of the ranch intimidating, but she'd slowly acclimate and grow to love it here as much as he did. He just wished she were well enough to begin enjoying it now, but she wasn't. Rafe sighed. It felt so strange being back at his desk. True to his word, Ryan had closed none of Rafe's bank accounts. An authorized co-signer, Ryan had written occasional drafts to reimburse himself for Rafe's half of the ranch expenses and left the banking set up alone. Rafe needed to get his driver's and pilot's license reinstated, but otherwise it was as if he'd never left. Yet so much had changed, all for the better. Maggie. God, he was so lucky to have found her. A smile touched his mouth as he pictured her sweet face and recalled her telling him that she wasn't Susan. As if he had the two of them confused? That was another concern of hers that he needed to address, but everything in good time. She was nothing like Susan in looks or personality, and Rafe wouldn't have wanted it any other way. Maggie was a beautiful person inside and out. He drew his gaze back to the check. He was stalling. No matter how he circled it, paying Boyle off was a necessity. He could fantasize about beating the hell out of the son of a bitch, but for Maggie's sake, he had to set aside his feelings and get this settled, cleanly and as painlessly as possible. He dropped his feet to the floor and pulled a business envelope from the drawer. After writing Boyle's address on the envelope, he sealed the flap, the muscles across his shoulders bunching with tension. For Maggie. Under any other circumstances, he'd never buy Boyle off. He had to think of this as an investment, the price he had to pay to have her in his life. Once he mailed this check, she'd be safe. And his. The thought jolted Rafe, and for a moment he gave serious thought to the warning Ryan had voiced the other day. This was a hell of a foundation on which to build a relationship. Was he being selfish? What if he was wrong and he couldn't make Maggie happy? If he put his mind to it, he could come up with alternative ways to help her without binding her to him in marriage. Legally, they wouldn't be a surefire, of course, especially when it came to Heidi, but he could give it a shot and only marry her as a last resort. I could also climb out on a high limb and saw it off, he thought dryly. He needed her. That was all he could think about, how very much he needed her and how much she needed him. Despite her determination to control her own destiny and do everything on her own, underneath all of that, she was vulnerable and scared. When she looked at him, he felt like a man again, someone worthwhile with a purpose for existing. He would make her happy. They were meant to be together. He sensed it every time he looked at her, a bone-deep feeling of rightness that defied explanation, but was no less compelling for all that. Meeting her had given him a second chance, and this time he wouldn't repeat the same mistakes. Nothing would ever be more important to him than his family. Nothing. He couldn't let her go. He simply couldn't. If he was being selfish right now, he'd spend the rest of his life making it up to her. Maggie surfaced from sleep slowly the next morning. The first thing she focused on was an ornately carved mahogany bedpost, and her stomach immediately knotted. At home, she didn't even have a headboard, only a mattress and box springs on a cheap metal frame. Last night, she'd fallen asleep staring at that bedpost, for in her mind, it was representative of everything in Rafe Kendrick's world, amounts of money beyond her comprehension, and all the power that accompanied wealth. Maggie was used to choosing the cheapest brands of tuna. She felt as if she'd wandered into a maze and might never find a way out. She heard a sound behind her and realized someone besides Jamie was in her room. No big surprise. Yesterday evening, she'd barely been able to yawn without getting pills shoved down her throat by Rafe or Becca, and water. They'd continually pushed tall glasses of the stuff at her. If it was possible for a person's pipes to rust, hers were corroded. Rolling over, she sought the source of the sound that had awakened her and saw Rafe. This morning he wore a chocolate brown shirt, the sleeves rolled back over strong, tanned forearms dusted with dark hair. Bent over the borrowed bassinet to change Jamie's diaper, he held a cordless phone wedged between his jaw and shoulder to free his hands. Maggie watched him care for her son with mixed emotions. When it came to Jamie, he was the epitome of patience, every touch of his big hands gentle. His voice, which could boom when he barked orders into the phone, always pitched low and laced with affection. Jamie was her baby. Rafe didn't even know who the child's father was. Yet to watch him, a person would think Jamie was his. No big surprise. Almost from the beginning, his feelings about Jamie had been glaringly apparent to her. He'd lost his own little boy, and in a twinkling, he'd had a substitute child dropped in his lap. As grateful as Maggie was for all that he'd done for her, and all that he planned to do yet, a part of her grew frightened every time she considered the possible ramifications. A grief-stricken man who'd been running away from life. Now he had put that grief on hold by submersing himself in a fantasy. Jamie wasn't the little boy Rafe had lost. And God help her, she wasn't Susan, the paragon whose praises were continually sung by the plump housekeeper, Becca. What was going to happen when Rafe Kendrick woke up one day and realized that his surrogate family could never replace the one that had been taken from him? That Maggie herself was a pathetic substitute for the woman he had adored? When he finally came to his senses, would he begin to resent her? And if that happened, wasn't it possible that he might vent his frustration on Jamie? As he tended to the baby, he listened to whoever was on the line, interjecting an occasional, or a low-pitched, I see. Evidently unaware she was awake, he tossed the soiled disposable diaper in a nearby receptacle, then scooped Jamie from the small bed, laid him over his shoulder, and stepped into the hall, drawing the door partly closed behind him. Through the crack, Maggie saw him pacing back and forth, patting the baby's back as he talked, his voice modulated so as not to disturb her. She found it amazing that a man who seemed so absorbed with other matters could at the same time give a child the attention it needed. Women did that sort of thing all the time, but in Maggie's experience, men rarely did. Maggie wanted to believe his feelings toward Jamie would never change, but if they did, he'd get the surprise of his life if he ever tried to mistreat her son. He'd have to go through her first. I called Harry yesterday right before he left the courthouse, and he's arranging for a waiver on the waiting period. Rafe turned to retrace his steps, jiggling Jamie, who was starting to fuss. How's the situation with Heidi looking? He listened for a moment. Yes, Becca got her enrolled in school this morning. I spoke with the principal on the phone and told him heads would roll if he allowed anyone but Becca or a family member to pick her up. He gave a decisive nod. Got it covered. I understand we need to move fast. Dr. Kirsch is coming out this morning, and a courthouse clerk is coming by with the paperwork. So get on it, will you, Mark? Before we get married, I want my name on that birth certificate. This Boyle character is a fruitcake. I sent him the check, but according to Maggie, he can't be trusted. I tend to think she's right. Silence. Then Rafe released a weary sigh. No problem there. She's willing to sign whatever's necessary. Just fill out the forms, draw up the papers, and bring them out. Maggie drew the covers closer and gazed forlornly at the empty fireplace across the room. When Rafe Kendrick decided to do something, he was like a bowling ball rolling down a steep incline. She was glad on the one hand. She didn't want there to be any chance she might lose Jamie, and it was critical that they get temporary custody of Heidi as soon as possible, which probably couldn't be as easily accomplished if they weren't married. But having everything happen so fast was a little unnerving as well. She hadn't yet been in this house 24 hours, and Rafe had been making arrangements ever since they arrived. It sounded to her as if he was pushing for their marriage to take place immediately. "I don't give a frigging damn about how you accomplish it," she heard him say. Startled by the vehemence in Rafe's voice, Maggie jerked her gaze back to the partly open door. She saw him make another turn and then pause. "Yeah? Jameson, huh? Never heard of him. How good is he?" Another silence. "Get him on retainer, then." Maggie glimpsed the housekeeper's stout form in the hallway. The next instant, Rafe had a baby bottle in his hand. "Thanks, Becca," he murmured. He shifted Jamie from his shoulder to the bend of his arm and began feeding him. "Hell yes, I won't hesitate," he said. Then he laughed. "It's the least of many evils. I won't lose any sleep over it, I can tell you that." He stopped pacing to gaze warmly at the baby in his arm. "The way I see it, in all the ways that count, he is mine." Another long silence. "I appreciate it, Mark." She heard the phone bleep as the connection was broken. The next instant, Rafe poked his head in the doorway. When he saw that she was awake, he smiled and re-entered the room. He clipped the phone to his belt as if it had become a necessary body part. "Good morning, sleepy head." He came to the bed. "Would you like to finish feeding your son his breakfast?" Maggie held out her arms for the baby. Keeping his hand tilted so Jamie wouldn't suck air, Rafe settled the child beside her. As she grasped the bottle, her fingers brushed against his, and a tingling sensation trailed up her arm. As though he sensed her reaction, he rested a twinkling gaze on hers. Maggie was so unnerved that she forgot to keep the bottle angled, and the nipple emitted a whistling sound. Oops. Rafe caught the end of the bottle to tilt it back up. A knowing grin tugged at one corner of his mouth. Colic, here we come. He stepped over to a cream-colored box mounted on the wall by the door. Pressing a button, he said, Becca, Maggie's awake. An instant later, the housekeeper's voice came back saying, I almost have her tray ready now. He pressed the button again. Don't forget her medication, please. Oh, and Becca, bring in a fresh pitcher of water, would you? Though Maggie kept her gaze on the baby as Rafe returned to the bed, she was aware of his every movement. She could feel him watching her and guessed that he was smiling. At least one of them was enjoying this situation. Personally, she felt as if she'd climbed onto a high-speed roller coaster with Rafe Kendrick manning the controls. Penny for them, he said as he sat on the edge of the mattress, the rich, faintly spicy smell of his shaving cologne surrounding her. You're looking mighty solemn about something this morning. Her thoughts were solemn. If left to her own devices, she would never get married. A little voice at the edge of her mind kept saying, Don't do this, Maggie. It's not just a temporary arrangement. Honey, can you talk about it? Whatever's upsetting you, just tell me. If you're still worrying about losing Jamie or that we'll have to send Heidi home, don't. He told her in a husky voice. The legal arrangements are being taken care of. I was just on the phone with Mark Danson, an old friend and attorney. He told me to tell you there's nothing for you to fret about, that he's on top of everything. He can handle the changes on Jamie's birth certificate by fax and have it done this afternoon. He's also phoning an adoption attorney named Jameson. The guy is a guru. He'll handle any legal difficulties resulting from those papers you signed, and he'll be handling the situation with Heidi as well. Once we're married, we'll be one step closer to getting temporary custody of her, and in regards to Jamie, Lonnie's hands will be completely tied. Oh, how Maggie wished she could be absolutely sure of that, but experience made her almost afraid to hope. And when will the marriage take place? She asked. It sounds as if you're pushing for soon. In a situation like this, the sooner it's all a done deal, the safer we are. She couldn't bring herself to meet his gaze. Honey, what is it? It just seems... Maggie bit her lip. It's all happening so fast is all. She gathered her courage and looked up at him. Here I am about to get married and I can't even get out of bed yet. He touched a fingertip to the end of her nose. His voice was laced with amusement when he replied, If you were completely well, you'd probably spend the first week of our marriage in bed. Maggie's stomach felt as if it dropped through the mattress beneath her and plopped onto the floor. Fiery heat flooded her face. He sighed and braced a hand on each side of her, his broad chest forming a canopy of muscle over her and the baby. I'm sorry, I shouldn't tease you like that. When she averted her face, he leaned around to look her in the eye again. Maggie, he said in a gently scolding tone, I told you not to worry about it, right? It'll be fine, I promise you. Whatever it is you're afraid of, just put it straight out of your head. He made it sound so easy, only it wasn't, at least not for her. Shifting his weight to one arm, he trailed the back of his knuckles over her cheek. You're not going to back out on me at the last minute, are you? Jamie's warm little body lay pressed against her, a reminder of all that she might lose if she did. No, she managed to say. I don't want to back out. She felt some of the tension ease from him. You're sure? If you're having second thoughts, speak up now, sweetheart, before it's too late. He acted as if she had a choice. I'm sure, she said hollowly.
And that, my friends, is it tonight. For those who called, 424-243-9617. Again, 424-243-9617. Press the number 1, join the conversation. We're going to open your mics and see what you thought of our reading tonight of Katherine Anderson's Baby Love as we get also into the bonus hour here on the Jumbo Braille program here on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Who do we got with us, Ruth?
Well, we always got the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Band of Angels. We got you, we got Jim, Six, Lila, and looks like Sandy.
All right. So.
But some of those don't talk, so we'll just leave it.
All right. So, Six, what do you think tonight?
Well, I wonder why he didn't like that horse. Why did he not like the horse?
Okay, the reason was, Six, more toward the beginning of the book, that was the horse that was in the horse trailer when his first wife was killed in the car accident. And he felt the horse was the cause of it. And doing so, he felt that way, and that's why he kind of, you know, like he put the fault on the horse when it really wasn't the horse's fault. It just happened to be an icy road, and his wife went off the road. But he blamed the horse anyway.
Oh, wow. Huh? Pretty interesting so far.
So, that's the situation.
Okay.
I mean, we should check with Sandy.
All right. And that's what I was about to do. Sandy, what did you think tonight?
About what?
About the book we were reading tonight. What did you think?
Pretty interesting.
Ah, okay.
But there's actually some parts to it I missed because I'm a little bit confused.
Well, if you didn't catch the earlier chapters, that's why you'd be a little confused, okay?
Yeah.
So
I'm not
that
home
makes
right
sense.
Now either.
Honey, did you get
I'm
that from that regular talking book service, or is this the one for the digital?
Yeah.
Oh, he could get the digital then.
Yeah, he could get the same. Sandy, you could get the same book. Even Six could get the same book through the talking book library.
Okay.
And we definitely represent Catherine Anderson. She's very romantic.
I might have to find it and get it. How you doing,
yep.
Six?
I'm doing
I
okay.
Said hi to
Six. Great. I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm okay, Six. So far.
Great. Glad to hear it. Okay. And that was a great show. You know a lot. That is a lot to remember.
About what?
Your show that you did last week.
Yeah.
I think I've watched these guys, Six. These guys can actually buzz through.
It's a lot of,
what do you call it? Those
a lot of stuff to remember.
Buzz saws. I mean, these guys are cool. Kim and Candy, I mean, they're both Sandy, man.
Yeah. I like doing things like that. Six?
Yeah. Okay. Man, that's excellent.
But, right now, I'm not home right now, but.
Okay.
I'm right down the street from Kenny.
Okay. Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Good to hear your voice.
If I can do anything for you, Six, let me know.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well, all right, guys. Six, if you want to have the last few words here, and then we'll get ready to close out here and get ready for tomorrow's show at 9 p.m., and we invite everybody to that show as well.
Well, we want to thank everybody for listening tonight to our book read. Make sure you check out Sandy's show. Great show. Anything you want to learn about handyman, tools, electrical, anything you want to know, he's the man. Want to thank you all for joining us. Have a safe 4th of July. Be safe. Leave it to the professionals. and good night.
Good night, everybody. God bless.
Hey, good sleep, everyone.
Kenny.
Yeah.
Give me a call on my cell phone after you're done.
Will do.
All right. Take care. We'll catch you in a little bit.